Good evening, and welcome to the Ann Arbor District Library on this rather blustery first day of spring. Hafsa Mijinyawa and Yen Azaro are the hosts of Cadence, a podcast for creatives. Less than 2 years ago, Hafsa and Yen were invited to speak with emerging artists from local high schools about creative career paths. They subsequently met for coffee, and Cadence was launched soon after. The podcast focuses on the joys and pain points of a creative, entrepreneurial path and brings on special guests each episode. Topics have spanned from how to price art and design work to how to manage time in the studio. They recently wrapped their second season recorded here at Fifth Avenue Studios, and tonight we kick off with two returning guests from season one, Donald Harrison, and from season two, Hein Lam. We will again welcome you to the Ann Arbor District Library.
We had to have our jams going. That's, you know, you got to have the cadence to kick things off. It's so nice to see everybody here. Thank you so much for coming out to our very first live episode. Oh my gosh, it's weird to be in front of real people for this, but we're gonna roll with it. It's gonna be cool. My name is Hafsa.
And I'm Yen.
And go ahead.
And we are so grateful to Ann Arbor District Library and Fifth Avenue Studios. Thank you, Steve, Elise, Rich, Matt, Tyler. And I believe there's an Aaron this evening that has supported making this happen. So thank you so much.
Absolutely. Really excited to be here. So obviously, we have two fantastic guests from our so far two seasons. My close friend and colleague, Donald Harrison, who I work with on IFFY and various other film things. You joined us for season one for a great episode. And Hein, you've joined us for season two to talk about everything in terms of what you do for your career, how you got there. I really think season two has been a really cool season because we really tried to delve a little bit more into the practical side of what it means to be a creative, right? Not to kind of keep going on this thread, but when we first started this idea for this podcast, you know, that was kind of the thing that we had chatted about, was like, you know, going back to those days when we were still just trying to figure out what we wanted to do as, you know, creatives for a career, what our interests and our skill sets could kind of morph into. It would have been so nice to be able to speak with, you know, environmental designers or creative designers or, you know, people who worked in film, people who are entrepreneurs, to just kind of, you know, dig into what they do and what the practical side of that is. So I'm really happy that we're able to chat with you both again today and kind of dig a little bit more into that and kind of keep that conversation going. Thank you so much for joining.
Of course.
We would love to start at your beginning. So can you tell us a little bit about what you do, how you intersect in this community, and what get you started here?
All right. Thanks for being here, and this is my first like live recording as well, so bear with me as I do my best not to embarrass the other three people on the stage, but my name is Hein, like the ketchup without the Z. I own a couple of design studios. We primarily do branding and website design and development for tech companies, particularly B2B. The first studio is called Huck Finch. That one's going on about 7 years now. It will be 7 years in December. We primarily work with growth and late-stage tech companies. So our main objective there is working with the marketing team of a tech company, because at that point, the website's really bloated. So how do we optimize it both for performance and for the usage of the marketing team? A lot of the times when we think about the user, we always think about the people who visit the website, but a key user is the people who actually use the website. So we're really trying to set up that website for success for these people so they can use it. About a year ago, I think literally today, officially, a year ago, we started the second studio called Grab Bag. And that one's geared more towards early stage startups. So like from seed to like Series A. And they have an entirely different needs, obviously different budgets. Their time frames are a lot different. So we have set up different packages based on their business objectives and how we can solve them. So if they validated their business already, they're trying to now launch for marketing. We have a marketing package for that. We have a package for them to go out to build a website that looks good for investors, if they're trying to pivot. So we're really geared more towards, rather than just giving you a nice website, because that's anybody can do that, really. We're really more thinking about objectively, what are you trying to do once you get that website? So that's what I do. And then the other part was my involvement in the community, right?
So wherever you want to take it, however you feel like you fit.
So I'm from California originally, but I think I've been living here long enough to officially call myself a Michigander or a Midwesterner. And I've chosen to stay here after graduating from Michigan. And I think there's just a lot of reasons to be here and stay here, not only in Michigan, but in the Great Lakes region. And beyond the design work, it's really about setting up these businesses for others to be able to see, like, wow, there's a lot of amazing stuff happening in the Midwest. I need to be there. I don't need to be in New York. I don't need to be in California. I can be in this third coast. And truly, my motivation at the end of the day is to, like, have everybody outside realize the Midwest is the place to be. So.
Awesome. Congrats on the 1 year.
Yeah.
Yeah, congrats.
And Donald Harrison, actually grew up in the area and left and went to California. And I was there about 10 years, right around the time that I felt like, now I'm like from here. Like 10 years is kind of like, now I'm a local, right? Mm-hmm. And then I decided, you know what? I don't think this is where I want to be, and I came back. So for me, what you just said, being from California, I felt that when I came back, that this is really where it's, to me, much more dynamic and exciting. California, Northern California was beautiful, but for me, it just wasn't the right wavelength for what I was looking to do. But I'm a filmmaker. That's where I got into it, actually, when I moved out west to the Bay Area. I got into filmmaking through documentary. I had not studied film in school, and I had an idea for a documentary about bowling, because I was raised to be a professional bowler, but chose a different path. And so I thought, well, I should take a class. I should learn how to do this. And so I started taking classes at a nonprofit in the city, in San Francisco, and I just fell in love with it. And I kept hearing in every class, like, you're not going to make money. You're not going to make a living doing documentary. I kept hearing this over and over. And I kept going, all right, well, I'll just keep going. I don't know why I wasn't listening. I just loved it. And so I figured I'll make money somehow. I'll have to have some other job. And lo and behold, you can actually make a living doing film, doing documentary. I ended up involved in three different film festivals. So I've been on the sort of nonprofit arts management side. I ran the Ann Arbor Film Festival for 4 years when I moved back to Michigan in the mid, 2006, 2007. And that was a great experience. Then I started my own studio, 7-cylinder studio. We're about to hit the 13th year since that set in motion. And so at this point, I'm a video producer, filmmaker, and then we started another film festival in Ypsilanti, Hofstra's a big part of, called IFFI, and that's Independent Film Festival Ypsilanti. I see other IFFians out in the audience here, Toko. And coming up on our sixth season, April 17th through 19th, and it's a super sweet event. Festivals can be Toronto, Sundance, they can be so big that you can barely get into a screening or navigate, the crowds. Or they can be like Ann Arbor, which I love. I think Ann Arbor Film Festival is one of the best in the country. And IFFI's highly accessible. You can show up and just meet everybody, see some amazing films, and really feel part of a community. And so we wanted to get something like that rolling in Ypsilanti, which had never had a film festival. Whereas Ann Arbor's, up to year 63rd year? Yeah.
That's wild. No, that's fantastic. Thank you for those bios. And I think it's really interesting, too, that both of you have this sort of, like, cross-continental kind of background. I mean, Michigan and California. And I guess I don't think this dovetails into the next question, but I was just kind of curious in terms of, starting to establish, who you are, in terms of your careers and your roles, did you find that there was difficulty in like transitioning from, from the West Coast to more of the East Coast kind of mindset? Like, how did that affect your businesses? And I guess I'll kick it off with Hyun. Like, how did that sort of transition affect you?
I think if anything, it made it a little bit easier because I think like, I'm from California. I'm the typical California guy, I think. Like, I surf. I have a I everybody asked me immediately, like, you're from California, right? Like, I just give off a vibe, I think. So, like, and running a business in general, but running a creative business, like, there are a lot of ups and downs. Like, if you're not every day at, like, saying to yourself, I'm going to quit today. I'm not doing this anymore. At least once or twice, you're probably not doing the right, not heading the right direction. And I think, like, that just kind of my, just California vibe just makes it a little bit just more, like, calming. And I don't know if this is true or not, but my wife always says that, like, because of, like, my vibe, like, within the, as I try to stand out within the community, and I think that the nice thing about Ann Arbor is that it is a community. Sure. Like, I, like, quote unquote, I'm more memorable somehow because, like, I'm the Asian guy with long hair and wears, like, weird colored beanies. Like, they're like, oh yeah, I know that guy, I guess. So yeah, I don't know, like, I think that has helped me in some sense.
Okay,
like,
yeah, it gives you a little bit of a character, I guess.
Yeah, like, I already stand out, so might as well just, I mean, that's the whole, what we want to do anyways. We're like, we're not trying, we started this to, like, not do what everyone else is doing. So if I can just be myself, which is, I know I'm weird, might as well just be weird. And if that's your thing, then great. If it's not, then it's probably better that we're not working together, because yeah, we're not going to have a good time. So, yeah.
Well, it was interesting. I moved back to the area in 2007 to Ann Arbor. I went to undergrad at University of Michigan. And so when I came back, I didn't know anybody. And, you know, as I met people, they'd say, oh, you know, what's your story? Like, oh, I moved back here, or moved here from California. And they go, why? You know, like, why would you move here from San Francisco? Go, oh, it's better here. And they would look at me like, are you pulling my leg? Like, this, this can't be true. And I would say, no, like, my quality of life, and it's true, has been so much higher since I came back. Mm-hmm. But it, I think having that experience, moving away, being in a big city, being in another place, I don't know if it was like I brought some of that energy, that California energy, but it definitely felt like when I came back and I met people, there was a lot of excitement just to have somebody who'd moved here from California. At least back then, I think it's happened quite a bit more. Mm. I feel like the salmon spawning, like going in, you know, upstream, is kind of how I heard other people talk about it. But when I came back, I didn't really know people, and I was, you know, I was a filmmaker, but I didn't have a portfolio. I said I was a filmmaker, but I wasn't a very seasoned filmmaker, so I wasn't getting much work, or I wasn't getting very good work. I didn't have sort of a foundation or a network at sure. that point. And so having the opportunity to get a job and work at the Ann Arbor Film Festival was appealing, and through those 5 years, I built an incredible network in this community, and that really served me well. But I guess the other answer to that question is then when I left to be a filmmaker, nobody knew me as a filmmaker by that point. Like, I was very well known as the Ann Arbor Film Festival person. Like, you, that's what you do. That's how almost everybody knew me. And so it took a while to say, oh, I make films too. You could hire me to do that now. Sure. So that took a little work to have that reestablished as my identity.
When we talk about making that jump where practice meets practicality, and we may have people listening that are worried about their kids going into a realm of creativity where we wonder, how do you make a livelihood? What was the moment where you said, I'm adulting now, like, I'm making a living doing this, or I've made it, or this is the prime client that I wanted? Have you, what was that moment?
Have you had that moment yet?
I don't know if I had that moment, but I think the thing that I look at that is, like, there's no real certainty anymore in any kind of career, right? Like, we see, like, in tech, like, thousands of people are laid off all the time at these companies. So, like, I mean, you know, not to just discuss much about, like, our current environment, but, like, the federal jobs were supposed to be, like, the sure thing, and they're clearly not anymore at the moment. So I think, like, yeah, of course, like, going into creative is going to be challenging, but everything ultimately is, though. Like, I can't imagine anything being anything more challenging than another thing. It's just, like, it's just, like, I think there's always going to be a formula for success. Like, it's just how, and then you injecting your own, like, secret sauce into it to kind of, like, getting to where you need to be, right? And also, it's your definition of what success is. Like, if you're trying to be a if I'm trying to, I'm not trying to be the gold medalist of like a website design development. I don't want all the awards. I don't want that kind of to be seen as that thing. I want people to see our studios as what they are. And if I can get that, then I guess that's the other part of the, your question is like realizing, like, oh, people want to come to me because of what we offer. And less about me having to convince them that like, this is what you need. Like people want it. So I guess that was probably like the moment of like, oh, okay, we have something here.
Yeah, it's working. Well, go ahead, Donald.
Oh, it's an interesting one because I'm trying to think of that moment I realized that, yes, it was going to work. I remember the moment that it was the opposite, that it was like the first year or so, roughly, that I'd been, you know, running my studio. Now I'm going to be a filmmaker. I'm going to see if I can do this. And that first year, I wasn't sure I was going to make rent. I mean, it took a while to build up my name and portfolio and just client. How do I even get work, right? It took some time. And I remember somebody knew me. They were new, a marketing director of this company, really cool company in town. I won't name any names. And they're great. But this woman came and was like, we need video. And she's like, you're the guy. And she brought me out. And I thought I already had the job because of the way I was introduced. So I got a full tour of the facility. I already had all the ideas. I was, you know, ready to roll. And then the owner came in to the meeting and was like, hey, so why do we need video? And I'm sure I answered that, but it wasn't very good. I wasn't ready to answer that question whatsoever. Like, oh, it's cool, you know, you put it on the internet. Whatever I said, totally unconvinced. And not only did I not get that gig, they didn't even do video for years. They were just like, that was not convincing. So that really was a wake-up call to make sure I could answer that question. Like, I had to get really serious about why video? Why should you spend thousands of dollars to make a video? And so I really worked hard at that. And then it was, I think it was probably my first sort of bigger nonprofit client that said, hey, we want a few videos, micro docs, and what do you think? And I thought, I don't know what a micro doc is, but I get the idea. And then they had money, and the first project we did turned out awesome. It was about Schultz Outfitters in Ipsy, right on the river. And it was for the Huron River Watershed Council, who's great, still a client. So I think for me, when I was like, oh, hey, a client can come in, they saw the value in it, they continued to see the value in it, and yeah, I thought, okay, I can do more of that. And having nonprofit experience as somebody who'd been a director, I started to realize that was a sweet spot because I could understand what they were trying to do and use video to sort of help with their outreach or their fundraising. And so that's been true. It's been one of our main clients has been nonprofits.
It's kind of finding that niche sort of helped you be like, oh, there's a place where I can fit in my skill set and really help support a specific type of storytelling with my skill set. That's really cool. And so my thing on the podcast is rambling at intermittent moments. So I feel like this is a great opportunity to kind of dovetail on, you know, that point about, you know, we're in a room full of creatives right now. Like, I see friends and colleagues of mine who are working successfully in the arts, including you guys. And I think one of the things that, or the themes that both of you are kind of touching on, is just consistency and discipline, right? Which applies, you know, kind of, as you're saying, to any, you know, any career, any role. You know, if you want to go into medicine, if you want to go into software engineering, whatever that career field is, you have to be consistent at it and you have to have discipline. And so when I hear, you know, parents or, you know, anyone kind of, you know, poo-poo the creative arts and be like, that's not really something that can be sustainable as a career. It's like, you can make it sustainable, but you have to work at it. Like, you've worked really hard at building your business. Both of you have, and so have you, and the people that I see in the audience. Like, everything, every piece of success, every win, every client that has, you know, consistently come back to ask for work or ask for a product or a service, that's because you've developed those relationships and you're really trying to make an effort to leverage what you can do well for the benefit of other people. And so I think that's kind of one, just again, for in terms of my ramble, that's one thing that I think could be helpful for parents, you know, or anyone who has, you know, a loved one that wants to go or pivot into a more creative role. It's like, you can do it, but you need to be consistent. That's just the bottom line with these things.
On both of your episodes, you talk about what sets you apart. And one of my favorite lines from your episode, actually from any episode in the season, Haim, that you said you could hire anybody to do this, but that's not why they're going to go to you. Mm-hmm. And in Donald's episode, I remember you talking about, like, what is good customer service, right? Mm-hmm. So in this landscape, when things are feeling a little bit heated, how do you keep the competitive edge? Mm-hmm.
Well, it's interesting how I don't remember my answer from then, so I'm curious what my great answer was back then. But I do know that, like, when the pandemic hit, it definitely was a time of great uncertainty, and now it feels familiar but totally different. We're now in this time where we don't know what's happening with the economy, and some of our clients, you know, projects might be getting put on hold or funding's getting pulled from different things. But I remember back then just thinking, okay, how can I be of service with the skills, the tools, the equipment, the knowledge that I have? How can I be of service to clients? And we started to do live streaming. We did all kinds of really creative things with our cameras and bought a little more technology and learned how to do some things we didn't do. And it wasn't our greatest work. It definitely wasn't our most creative work, although we had to get creative sometimes to even make a film in sort of isolation. But we just really tried to stay grounded in what are we good at? Who are, like, what are we, our skills and talents, and how can we be of service to our clients? And so I feel like, to me now, that's something that I continue to try and do, is just think, you know, of the people that we get to know, understanding our clients, what they need, then how do we be of service, translating what we know and what film and video can do into their world in a way that makes sense.
Yeah, so I think at the end of the day, like, it's two things. Like, one, being true to you and, like, what you bring to the table. Because, like, I think, like, all of us, like, in some aspects, like, sure, the work that we do is creative, it's unique to us, but, like, we're not the only ones doing this thing. I'm not the only one making websites. I'm not the only one making logos. Like, there are a lot of people out there, a lot of people who get paid less than I do, I'm sure, and who are way better than how I do it. So one thing is, like, recognize that, like, I'm not trying to be the best. Like, I'm trying to give my clients the best product that they can get, but I'm not shooting to be, like, the best website designer. Because, like, for me, the way I see it is that, like from your creative, like, development, you can only get to a certain point where you can, like, get better at your craft and then be able to turn around and charge your customers that. Like, because at some point, they're not going to be able to recognize and distinguish, why am I paying more, right? It's like, why would you pay for an 8K TV versus a 4K TV? Like, most people can't tell the difference, but they're more expensive. And unless you care about TVs, you're not paying for that, right? So, like, at some point, like, the additional work you're putting in to get better at your craft, it's just not going to be worth it. So that's all to say that, like, there has to be other ways to get the work. And for me, it's about everything that's not the work itself. It's the business side of things, the customer service and thinking about that. And for me, the way that I've approached it has been, well, what are the things I care about? Like, what are the things that impress me? Like, why would I give my money to anything? And it sounds really bougie, but I love, like, going to Michelin star restaurants. Like, I try to hit them up whenever I can. And what I realize I love about them is just the overall experience that you get from the moment you make that reservation to when the time you leave. And our aspirations for our studios and any business I open continuing forward is going to be, we are going to be a 3 Michelin star, whatever, fill in the blank, right? If Michelin, like, guy had a rating for this, we would be a 3 star. So how the hell do we become a 3 star for this? And partly, of course, doing great work, that's a key thing, but it's everything else that we incorporate into it, the anticipation of customers' needs and, like, setting up a really great customer experience that I know nobody else is willing to put in that work because it's too much work. It's, like, more work than most people are willing to do. So that's how we maintain a competitive edge.
That's great. Thank you for that. I just spent a couple weeks ago, I was chatting with some stamp students up at Art and Design on campus, and you can tell where the soft skills have been sharpened a bit, and you can see who's going to be really good at client grooming in the future. Like, who writes a thank you note? Who you know, has like a good presentation, asks follow-up questions. And those are some of the soft skills in the professional practice I wish that we could talk to young people about. But it's something that you have to learn the hard way. Like, you can't send out a request for a proposal, and then sometimes they just don't respond, right? Or I talked to two students, and they both said, oh yeah, I did this whole day, 9-hour day, painting a boat. It was a big fish, and I got $50 for it. And I was like, oh, well, that's just for the paint, honey. Like, you gotta charge a lot more. But how do you tell them that, right? Like, how you gotta learn on the job, right? That's the hard part.
You gotta bump your head a little bit. I feel like a lot of this, the creative career, and maybe this applies to anything else too, but maybe I'm speaking from personal experience, but you kind of have to bump your head and sort of learn the hard way, right? Like, when something, you know, especially when it comes to working with clients, because, and we kind of talked a little bit about, like, in the networking sense, but working with people can be difficult. And I think that's something that, you know, particularly if you're younger and you're kind of have stars in your eyes about, you know, going into art or going into, you know, a media field, you don't necessarily, you're not prepared for what it's like to have to work with another person, right? And to have to, you know, understand and listen. Like, active listening is such a huge thing of what we all have to do. And, you know, sometimes you can't just produce the thing because you think it looks cool or because it's what you want to do. There has to be kind of a creative compromise, right? And that's just something you kind of have to kind of learn the hard way after a couple of clients and a couple of gigs. And it's like, well, you know, it's not a bad thing that, you know, a certain thing happened, but it's a learning moment that you can then take into the next project with you.
Yeah, could I add on to this idea? So something that I always kind of tell people, particularly like creatives, and I talk to them, is like, your goal should always be two things. You should either be earning, aka making money, or learning, right? So if you can do one of these two things, you're gonna be okay, right? So like, even if you don't get a client, like in your case, when I've had cases where I've lost what would have been great money, I think I lost close to a six-figure deal, and it sucked then, but I know I've made that money on the back end because I was willing to be like, well, I reached out to them. I was like, can you explain to me why we lost? Like, they're like, oh, actually you finished second, but these other people did this thing. Mm-hmm. And immediately I was like, all right, we're doing this. We're incorporating this, but in our own way. And we've made, like, we've won so many more deals because we lost that deal, right? So like, mm-hmm. it's that learning part that allowed us to continue to grow for our business. And then of course, like, we get to make money, which is nice, but yeah, it's always like if it's worth like doing, in this case of like painting this big thing, but it's kind of like but they can learn from it. Yeah. But beyond them making the $50, and that's way worth more than that yeah. dollar value. And then you can learn, like you said, how do I best like provide like the best project like deliverable without going overboard, because now I'm giving more than what the customer is asking for, kind of thing.
And then when you can get hired to earn and learn at the same time, that's like the ultimate. I've had projects where, you know, they ask for something that we haven't done, and we go, well, we could do that. We, you know, I'm sure we could, and then we have to figure it out. We're learning how to do it, and they're paying us versus us like going to school, paying to learn the thing. So yeah, if you can do either, it's great. And then if you combine them, that's like the ultimate project.
Spot. We were talking about it just a little bit on the edge, but can we talk a little bit about scope creep? We talked about it on an episode,
yeah.
But how are we managing when somebody is asking or demanding more than, and how do we rally that back? What is your tactful way of handling that? I've heard Donald do it. I feel like you're a good snake charmer in that sense.
Well, you know, I think you... Like when I started the studio, I was taking on a lot of really low paid projects and making a lot of mistakes in terms of not having clear boundaries and doing whatever they wanted. I think that's kind of a natural path for somebody who's starting out. You know, keep taking on work. You're probably not going to get paid as much until you build your portfolio And that gives you an opportunity to see what can sort of go awry. You have clients that keep asking you to fix the thing 10 times, and you're like, this isn't a way to do things. So, for me, I mean, a lot of it is establishing that when you sign on the client, you know, try to have a contract, an agreement that's very straightforward and easy to read. I don't like when there's these very legal-oriented things, and try to find clients who, you know, we pretty much could do a verbal agreement, but I put things in writing and keep it really simple. But yeah, trying to as we take on the client, I also learned to start quoting a range, and I didn't know that I could do that when I started out. Like, oh, it's going to be X amount of dollars for your video. And then it's like, I don't know, it's so many variables. And then when I started out, I'd almost always like, oh, I should have charged more. We put in so much work into that. And then I started to say, well, it's going to be between this and that, and we'd like it to be cheaper for you. But the more time it takes, the more expensive it will be. And so a lot of times now when scope creep enters the equation, I go, we can totally do that. It's going to be on the higher side of what I quoted you. And then that's cool. But then oftentimes they go, oh, you know, we don't need to do all of those things. Because sure. With creative projects, you know, Hyun, I'm sure you experience this too. A lot of people, they get creative ideas too. You know, they're not the designer, they're not the filmmaker, but they watch movies, they watch, they look at websites all the time. So they like, oh, hey, what, could we add this thing? Could we do this thing? So usually the answer is like, yes, we could. I'm not sure why you'd want to sometimes, but that may cost more money. And that often can kind of steer it back on course. Because, a lot of clients will just kind of just want to keep going and sort of turn it into something that I've had a project that took a year for a client who we love, very creative company in town. But it was just like, hey, we want to build momentum and get this done and delivered so it can be of value to you. Like for us to take a year because you keep sort of rethinking it and having new ideas. You know, if we have to do that, we do that. But we really encourage them to like, let us help you get this finished. Like, let's get some momentum going.
Oh, I was going to ask a question kind of to both of you, because obviously both of you have very client-driven work. For, you know, again, somebody who might be new to the creative field and, you know, not sure how to communicate effectively with clients, can you share like tips that you've learned of how to effectively collaborate with people who, you know, kind of to your point, maybe they know what movies are and they have a certain kind of taste, but they're not a videographer, they're not a cinematographer, they're not an editor. How do you communicate with someone like that and kind of and still stay collaborative? And same for web design. How do you stay collaborative with people who have a certain vision, but as a designer, you know, like there may be some caveats. Maybe we can do this, but we can't do that. Like, what are tips you have for someone who doesn't know how to navigate those conversations?
So I think I can incorporate both my response to this and the scope creep thing together, because like at the end of the day, like to answer your question first, it's very much like recognizing what we bring to the table as creatives and we're in Ann Arbor, right? So one thing that's famous here is Zingerman's, and one thing that's awesome about them is they have Zing Train, where they train people to how to be more like Zingerman's. But an amazing thing that they have there is this idea of 100% commitment. And the whole idea there is like, as a trainer, I'm gonna give you 100% as a trainer, but this is only gonna be successful if you come 100% ready to learn as a trainee, right? That's the only way this works. It's not a 50-50 relationship. And so that, I learned this and I incorporate it into our work in that like, I'm gonna give you 100%, which means I'm gonna give you the best website, best brand you're gonna get, but also my strategic thinking on how this works. Mm-hmm. You're gonna come 100% by telling me about your business because I don't know jack shit about that. Sorry. So that's where you come in. You have to explain to me, what do your customers need? What do you need? I don't care what your preferences are about colors, what you think about this stuff. You hired me to do this. Mm-hmm. This is why you hired me. You hired me strategically to do this thing for you. So if you can do it, feel free to do it. But you know, it's not meant to be like antagonizing, but like it's you have to like
level set.
Yeah,
right?
The level set with them is that like have your creative input, but here are all the markers in which that comes. Like for us, we do the creative direction, we do the wireframes, and the moment those wireframes are approved, we tell them we're going to development now. Anything in development, when we give you any kind of feedback there, you give us any kind of design changes, I will add money to your final invoice. It's just a clear expectation for them, right? And the other thing around this too is like people don't know what they don't know. So we have to like go into it clearly communicating like what we want out of them at every stage as well. Like for us, like, oh, when I share a wireframe with you, if I'm not clear what I want out of you on that, you're gonna go to the bottom of the barrel feedback, which is like, I don't know if I love this color. I don't know if I like this here. Like, because what else are you supposed to be thinking about? I'm not giving you the lens in which to like to think.
Right.
So the lens is like, you know, is this gonna convert? Is this the right path of the story? Like, do you understand it? Like tell me these things that are answer these questions for me. I don't care if you think the logo is too small. Like, I don't care if you think there's too much white space. That stuff is not what matters, right? Like, it's
set the parameters.
Yeah, these are the parameters in which we're operating. So yes, and then that incorporates like the scope creep stuff too, where it's like very early on, like just laying it out, like this is what happens when you do this. Like, we only do so many rounds of this. And the other thing that helps with that too for us, and we learned, is that we do not do milestone payments. So a lot of like agencies or studios will do like, oh, I'll take a certain percentage up front, and then every time we hit a certain milestone, I get the rest of it. If you do that, stop. Do not do that anymore. It's the worst idea ever. What you want to do is 50% up front, and then monthly. However long you think this project's supposed to take, if that project's supposed to be 3 months, the remaining 50%, one third, we're done. You got paid. So then anything else after that, then you just keep adding on the money. Like, hey, like, I'm already paid. I'm done. Like, which means I delivered everything I'm supposed to deliver for you within the time frame I told you I was going to. The only reason why this project's going any longer is because of you, so you're going to pay me for my time.
That's straight up. I like that.
We're going to transcribe that part and just highlight it at the very top of the episode. That's great.
Yeah, I would say I agree with all of that. The last part, I'm wrapping my head around that, how that would work in my world. But yeah, early on, I felt like I had clients where I might not get paid for 6 months or 9 months, like all these things were like, I'm like trying to make rent and I'm waiting for money from this people who have all this money and they're not paying me. So there are things you can do like that. You start learning like, oh, here's my new approach to this. So some of it's trial and error, some of it's learning from peers. So if you're newer to this profession, whichever creative profession, try to network with some other people. Maybe they're further along and maybe they're friendly and willing to mentor you. So I've had some people that I've gotten to work with, some in this room, who I've learned things from. And I think just then, as you get more established, you can be more confident and honest with clients or potential clients. I feel like a lot of my early calls with people are being very skeptical of why they even need the video. Like, I'm fortunate that I don't need the project, right? I'm not so at a point where I just whatever I can say to get the work because I need it to make, you know, the next rent payment, I'm not in that position anymore. So, hey, why do you really need this video? Like, you convince me you need the video, and I'm going to be very honest and kind. I try to be nice about it, and I think I usually am, but professional and kind, but really skeptical and honest. Like, what are you trying to do? I mean, it's kind of what you said about, like, your approach with the website. Like, what are you really trying to do? You know, and that's often where I start. You know, early on with the studio, I had to convince people video was of value, that like, hey, you should have video. And then fortunately, we got more in the, I like to think of it as like in the line of money, because it was clear that they didn't need video. It wasn't like a bottom line thing. And then it shifted where enough companies oh, everybody's got video. Like, we probably should have some video. And then we started getting more calls. And we didn't have to convince them they needed video, but then we had to understand, well, what are they doing with it? Like, yeah, you have it, but who's seeing it and for what? And what's the idea? Like, what are you trying to accomplish? So I've definitely now convinced people not to do videos. I usually feel good about that. Or certain videos that that's not our thing. You know, we usually don't cover events. So when people are like, hey, we want to cover this whole conference, we're like, hey, you know, that's not what we do. So yeah, I think that really just being direct. But the more you do it, the more you do the work and just build your experience up, the more you can be confident when you have those conversations. Early on, I didn't know what I was doing. I mean, I pretended I did, or I tried to, but you know, it was hard to really be that honest and clear.
We're all just pretending a little bit, but.
So we are actually nearing that mark of time. So to wrap this up before we take any Q&A, could we piggyback on what you were just saying and talk to Donald of the past? What piece of advice would you give him as he's just starting out? And Hafsa and I will answer this as well.
Piece of advice for me starting out, well, I know as a filmmaker, so, you know, I sort of wear these two hats, like somebody who's made my own independent films and art, right? That sort of idea of like, I'm an artist, I make my own films and art pieces, and then I have a business and I run it like a business. But as the filmmaker self, make more films, short films, and finish them and make the next one, like get more, you know, reps, as they would say in, you know, sports. Like, just get more reps under your belt. Like, more practice getting through the entire creative cycle and do another and then do another. And, you know, I actually did do, you know, some pro bono projects. Like, if you haven't done enough work, if you don't have enough portfolio, just take on your friend's project. Just do more work so that you build up your experience faster. But then, yeah, find really good mentors, people you like working with. I mean, I've done that, but it took a long time, you know. And so now I'm at the point where I try to only work with people that I really get along great with and that I would go out for a drink with or meet up for coffee or see socially or start on other projects with. So really find your people. Find the people that you do good creative work with and throw them work. They throw you work. And then your colleagues and peers, you know, people... I'm friends with some other filmmakers in the area, and it's always great to refer, you know, clients their way and meet up and share ideas.
So I think a lot of times we hear like our time, it's like our most like valuable like asset, right? But like, I don't think that's true. I think it's our attention, right? Our attention is our most valuable thing. Like we have time. It's just like, where are we focusing our energy on? And so like I would tell me when I first started was like, just be mindful about what you're paying attention to. Like, I think like I didn't go to school to become a creative. I didn't do graphic design, any of this, computer engineer. I always jokingly say, as any good Asian, I went to college pre-med. I applied to medical school, decided I didn't want to be a doctor. I became a hospital administrator, and then somehow I found myself making websites for tech companies now. But when I first started, like, we didn't have a portfolio, so my attention was all on, oh, if I don't have this, no one's going to want this, like, want us and blah, blah. So I was so heavily focused on that. But again, like, that's not the thing that sells us. Like, I immediately go into our conversations with any lead by saying, you're probably talking to like 5 or 6 other design studios and agencies right now. All of us are going to be able to deliver a good looking website. So if that's table stakes, why go with us? Why go with any of these people? I'll tell you why you go with us. So it's not even about the work, right? So like I would tell me back then, like, don't care so much about the work and the fact that your work quality isn't as great as others around you. Like, don't have that imposter syndrome kind of part, essentially. And just focus on the things that you do well. And it's really like the business side of things. Think like realizing that I can speak and talk to startups and businesses as a business owner in a business way without having to be like, oh, but this thing's gonna look so cool. It is gonna look cool, but I had to be able to explain to them, like gain their trust and confidence in me for me to be able to then say like, we should do this thing. Not only will it look cool, but it's gonna be able to show off your product so much better than something static. They're like, I love that, let's do it. So I think I answered that question.
That's right? A good answer, absolutely. Are we answering it too, Jan? Do you wanna go first? Oh, me? Okay, all right. Well, what would I tell past me? So for those who don't know, I'm a graphic designer slash motion designer. So a lot of my work takes place within the context of a computer, a laptop, pushing pixels, so to speak. But when I was younger and still today, my core kind of focus and interest was storytelling. So I have very much an interest in storytelling for the screen. I used to write screenplays when I was younger. I still do on occasion. And I think something I would tell, you know, kind of my past self is to dig into that more. Because I think that in some ways you start to sort of lose passion for things that actually really help you in sort of the technical parts of the careers that you move into. So for example, with graphic design, what I like to say is that I sort of unwittingly ended up being a communicator. A lot of what I do as a graphic designer is communication through, you know, the visual, you know, medium, through moving images. And so if you don't have a really strong and kind of polished and consistent kind of muscle for storytelling and for understanding how do I, you know, take a concept that might be abstract or even a concept that might be, you know, really clear to someone else but unclear to someone else, and how do I package that into something that is engaging and immersive and that makes sense? How do you do that? And I feel like I didn't really, when I was in school and studying, I didn't dig into that as much because I was so focused on the technical pieces. I was focused on learning, you know, After Effects and Illustrator and Photoshop and all of those, you know, very key skills, which I'm really glad that I have today. But in honing those skills, I didn't pay as much attention to those fundamental skills. And I find myself now having to kind of go back and be like, okay, I need to study more about storytelling. How do you engage with somebody on, you know, a psychological or subconscious level, and how can I bring that into the technical side of my work so that I'm, you know, really producing something that is memorable for people that aren't just me? So that's kind of what I would go with. I mean, my work again is very technical. It can be a bit abstract, but the storytelling piece is so fundamental because, I mean, so much of what we do is talking to each other and trying to create worlds and create memories. And if you don't have those abstract skills in a strong place, you know, it doesn't really matter how good you are with Photoshop or, you know, any kind of software, because, you know, you don't have those building blocks.
I would tell younger Yen to be really, really good at what you do so that you're not afraid to ask your value. You know, study money, study up how to invest money, what you want to do to move it around. When I used to deal art, the dealers and I had this joke that you could sell 10 paintings for $10,000 or you could sell 5 paintings for $20,000. And you want to be really good at what you do so that you can hustle less, not harder, and still make just as much.
Boom.
I'll throw out one bonus thing is, make people remember you. Like, it's not your customer's job or any potential customer to remember you. It's your job to make them remember you. And like, it's little things like now, especially you can go on social very easily and post something on LinkedIn or Instagram or wherever, or going to networking. Like, this is something I learned later on, is that like I realized that like I can put out great work, but if I don't promote it, one, it won't matter. It's just as if like a tree fell in the forest. And two, like if I don't give a potential customer a reason to think about me, they're not gonna think about me like as much as they love us. And we've had it multiple times where I'll post something on LinkedIn and I'll get an email or a DM like from like new customer or a past customer, like, oh, I was meaning to reach out to you. I have a friend who needs a website. I saw your post. It reminded me to reach out to you. It's like it's just how it works. So you have to go out there and remind people about you.
It's like self-marketing. That is hard.
And I'll add a bonus tip as well. because I've sort of, you know, when I started the studio, I didn't know this would happen. You sort of want repeat clients. And then we had so many clients that have come back year after year. And I think a lot of it is that we're enthusiastic about what we do in sharing and teaching. So a lot of our clients learn like how to make a video, how to make a video that they want. And so, you know, for them to come back, it's like, oh, hey, we like this. We're learning. We can make a better video because we understand, you understand us and vice versa. So yeah, just sharing so that they understand how to get the website they want. They don't need to do all this, you know, minor stuff. Like, what are the things for them as the client that they can learn to make a better website or a better video?
Thank you, Donald. Thank you, Hein. Thank you, Hafsa.
Thank you, Ian. Thank you,
and
both.
And thank you, Ann Arbor District Library and Fifth Avenue Studios. Thank you all for being here. Yay.
I guess one thing. Did we want to have any Q&A at all? I don't know. I see faces that I know in the audience and faces that I don't. So if anyone does have questions, this is your time. But if you don't, that's okay.
With this bonus.
This is bonus. Oh, this guy has a question.
I knew he would have a question. Look out.
Don't heckle us, please.
No worries. I'm struggling a little bit because I want to ask a really mundane question. But I'm going to shoot. We talked a lot, or y'all talked a lot about client relationships and getting work and the face that you present to the world. I was doing my annual scroll of LinkedIn just a couple days ago and clicking and seeing my friends doing great stuff and wishing that I participated more in the platform. And everyone's got recommendations that people have given them. And I've got like two. I feel really shameful about this because I know I've done good work. But it just started me thinking, like, do people form little packs? Like, I'll write a recommendation for you if you write one for me, because I've never had that conversation. But certainly people don't just offer up testimonials, right? Like, do either of you have a little secret, like, what do you call up the client after the job is done and say, hey, would you mind dropping me a testimony? I'll buy you a drink next time I see you. Or how do we get those?
I can go. So we do account management as a big part of our thing, and there's a lot of like milestones in which like we have it on our process. So like the AM has to go and reach out to the customer, like, how are things going? Are things going well? And then usually things are going well. If they're not, one of us is going to know about it because we are on the project. But usually at that point, they're like, yeah, everything is good. Everything's awesome. And they might say something, and you're like, oh, that's great. Can we use this as a testimonial? Or at the end of it, we're like, hey, like, we're starting to wrap up. Like, we need to start thinking about our next steps. Like, are we going to stay on? Are we going to leave? And then if we're going to offboard, then right afterward, like, do you mind shooting, like, a testimonial out for us? Here's, like, some template language that you can use. And then at the very beginning, so we don't offer discounts. We don't offer discounts unless in that very moment they're willing to go on LinkedIn to promote that they're going to work with us, like they're excited to work with us. That's the only time I'll give a discount. Like, so it's kind of like throughout the process, right? Like, where can I ask for this? And then 3 months later, follow up, like, hey, how's the new website, especially we're not working with them anymore? Any questions, anything we could help with? And if you're still loving it, like, we'd love for you to reshare that post and, you know, things like that. Or we're going to do a post if you don't mind, like, and we'll tag him in, like, you don't mind resharing it too. Kind of, so just, again, it's like, you got to tell people what you want them to do, right? So, and then you got to make it as easy as possible because we're lazy, like. So.
Yeah, I'm in your boat. I keep saying that I should collect testimonials and put them on my website, and then it's a project I never get to. And so, I'm sure that I could get them. I would reach out and get the testimonials. But as far as like LinkedIn, I don't know. Maybe I have some. Maybe I don't. I got to do my annual look at it and see where it's at. Marketing is very important, and websites and all these things are very important. But you know, at some point, you know, word of mouth, like, mm-hmm. you know, again, those relationships, clients, somebody who I worked with, they now are at some new place and then they recommend me. That's the number one thing. So if I add 10 more testimonials to LinkedIn or my website, I don't know that it would make really a big difference. I think it would be good. Now I kind of want to do it, but it really is more that, did they have a good experience? Did they get that 3-star experience working with me? And do they say, oh yeah, I'm at a new company, I want to do that again? And you know you do good work and you have return clients and they spread the word. So yeah, I don't think they're holding it against you.
Yeah, I think the word of mouth is a big thing, because I mean, definitely for me, I think I don't really need testimonials for the kind of work that I do. And I'm kind of allergic to compliments. Like, they kind of creep me out. They don't creep me out, but I just get weird about it. Don't compliment me. but yeah, I think like the word of mouth thing is big. Cause like, I mean, so many of the people that I know in this community, I've just heard of, like, you know, I think I've heard of you through word of mouth before I even met you and we chatted. It's like, oh yeah, Yen is this awesome illustrator who does fantastic work. And I met you at like networking things with Rick and stuff. So it's like, especially in our community where there are so many sort of creatives of different sort of mediums, like I think we start to meet each other and then our clients start to meet each other. And there's like a little bit of cross pollination there, but I say this again as an introvert. Like, I sit at home on my laptop pushing pixels, so it's more of your guys' realm. Paloma.
So much learning tonight from you all. Thank you so much for sharing. So my question is, you do all these things to keep the flow of your business going. And obviously, many of us, we do the same. Do you feel like at the moment, at the present moment, with everything that is going around, you have to push harder for the business to keep producing? Like, do you get the same amount of calls and contracts and people willing to put so much money into a project with you, or has it changed this year?
I know you have an answer to this too.
Well, I was only going to say this because I think I've already complained to the both of you that I've lost projects. I think I've lost 3 projects in the last 4 weeks. And so I have to think about it in terms of it just opened up a window for something else. And I mean, if I lose a project once or twice a year, I just tell myself it wasn't the right fit. Because you know sometimes when you meet a client or somebody in the community where you're just like, we aren't gonna work well together. And so you walk away from that because that is a learning opportunity. But also I was sitting here thinking, like, the four of us actually offer services that don't always offer a tangible or YouTube product, but we offer time-based services. A lot of it is experienced. And so what is really the product? The product is the four of us. It's like the soft, warm handoff when the project is done. It's like returning phone calls, emails. The product is us. And so I just have to continue to trust in the relationships and then trust in repeat, returning business, reputation, knowing that my soft skills are going to carry me to the next thing. So yeah, there is a little bit of a grind, but I feel comfortable about it.
Yeah, I know for us, we're very busy and haven't seen an impact. With the pandemic, we definitely had clients that things just weren't going to happen, and so those went away. But in my experience with other significant shifts, like, you know, the .com, you know, meltdown in 2001. So in my experience, whether I was in a nonprofit or my own business, usually it's been more like a year before I sort of see. It's not like in those first few months, 6 months. And I think a lot of my clients are, they already have their budgets, they already have their money. It's like a year from now, I might notice that some of my nonprofit clients, hey, we're not doing video this year, or we got to do it for half the price, or I don't know. But so far, there's, you know, still, I think, a lot of demand for what we do. Like, and it may be that it shifts so that people maybe need video and films in a different way or value it differently than they would have 6 months ago. I don't know, but we're going to try and just, again, look for how can we offer the best of what we do for places that we care about, we believe in, that can value what we do.
I'm always a big fan of like rhymes, so niches get riches is something that I always kind of like say. So like we haven't really felt an impact because like we've niched in a way that like has diversified ourselves though. Because like I mentioned with Huck Finch, we work with like growth and late stage companies. These are Series B, Series C. They tend to have a good amount of money and they have the budget already set aside for the work. It's not like they decided, oh, I need a website, right? This is stuff they had to get money for already. So this is money they have to put into this. And the budgets tend to be a little bit larger. And a lot of that work, too, tends to be like retainer work. So we're there kind of like ongoing. So it's more predictable revenue for us. So we have that in place. And then with GrabBag, that's like early stage. And that tends to come from like either grants. So some of those might be affected. And then like, but then we still have like early investors who are putting money into these ideas. A lot of them are going to be AI. And we don't specialize in any kind of particular industry, just more that it's tech. As long as it's B2B tech, I'll build your brand, I'll build your website. The other thing where like, I'm also like very like, the sky's gonna fall type of person, which I think is kind of good. So like, I am always about like, how much money do I have in the bank, right? So like that burn rate has always been important to our business. So if we stop getting money, any new clients now for the next 6 months, we will survive, and the likelihood of us not getting a customer for the next 6 months is pretty unlikely. But it's those little things that you have to kind of set up for times of uncertainty. But at the same time, it's during these times where like you get to really determine if you have a real business or not. Like it sounds somewhat cold and callous, but like anybody can have a business when money is flowing, right? Like if people are just willing to give away money, like it's easy. But when the money starts to dry up a little bit, then like that's when you really kind of see the resiliency in your business and if you created a business at all, right? So it's during this time where like you could really be opportunistic, where like Yen, you were kind of talking about like, oh, like maybe those two weren't right, but now I can have a chance to like rethink about things and invest in things I didn't get to put my time into. And that happened to us in 2023. Like that year sucked ass for us. But at the same time, that allowed us to really think about processes and really start to create that 3 Michelin star experience. And we wouldn't have been able to do that without that bit of a slowdown. So again, it's like, okay, I'm not getting the business now, but I'm going to still set this business up for success because there's things I need to do that have been put in the back burner. So.
I work in the tech space, a cybersecurity company within a marketing department. So my kind of situation is a little different because I feel like I'm a little bit on the inside looking out, for lack of a better word, with a lot of the turmoil happening within the tech industry, a lot of the return to office mandates and the layoffs that have been happening. So it's definitely affected people that I know and people that I care about. It did affect me a little bit earlier on a couple of years ago, which is how I got to my current position, which has been really nice. But what I've been noticing in terms of specifically roles that work within like corporate environments, like creative roles in corporate environments, what I've been noticing is that there's a little bit of a tendency for companies to look for creatives who have multidisciplinary skill sets. So, and the reason I bring this up is because, you know, I didn't always know like what a creative role could be within the context of like a big company, like, you know, networking or, you know, whatever type of company has, you know, marketing departments, which a lot of them do, B2B and stuff like that. But a lot of companies are looking for creatives who have multiple skill sets, because they're not necessarily investing a lot into building out creative in-house. They might be going to larger agencies. Like they have budget to go to larger agencies and kind of have that kind of ad hoc approach to developing their brand, getting brand assets out and whatnot. So I say this to, you know, designers who might be interested in working in tech still but aren't sure because everything just looks so uncertain, my suggestion is to build out your other skill sets. Make yourself more marketable. Make yourself more invaluable by not just being a graphic designer, but having some sensibility for, you know, UI, UX design, know a little bit of, you know, editing or video production. It doesn't mean that you have to try to specialize and be all these things because that's not realistic, but to have a little bit of that sensibility just to make yourself, you know, to adapt. I mean, it's a changing environment, and I think it's worth it to learn new skills to help keep yourself relevant, for lack of a better word. Any other questions? Thank you, Paloma. You guys are awesome. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. Appreciate y'all. And season 2 of Cadence is now available to binge, minus this episode, which will be up soon. So make sure you check that out. Thank you all. Take care. Have a good night.